paper which is in progress. And although the physics of reheating is very rich, there are many things that I could have discussed. I chose to discuss what I consider the simplest model. You may think that for you is not the simplest, not the most natural. However, the aim is to avoid complications and really to focus on the simplest model that one can consider and to show that already for these models we have some degree of uncertainty. So things which I will not discuss, for example, is what happens when you have flat directions and you're going to populate them. There's a very interesting literature there. However, this would go beyond what I want to say. And also we'll not discuss string effects. There are also a series of interesting papers on reheating after string motivated models of inflation. So what I want to say, we all know the history of the universe is very well understood after nucleosynthesis. And here, for example, is after the last boomerang release. And just very, very roughly, we know, right, there is about one-third in matter, two-thirds of some form of dark energy. And we can follow just simply rescaling what was the dominating fluid at different stages. And we end up until the radiation-dominated period that we know when it ended, but we don't know when it started. And the only thing that we are sure about is that the universe was radiation-dominated at the time of nucleosynthesis, which is about redshift 10 to the 10. So this is our understanding of the universe from nucleosynthesis on. And we have also some good understanding, I believe, of the universe, at least believing in inflation, at earlier times. And of course, we had heard the previous talk much better than what I'm doing here. So here I just want to refresh the most basic stuff when you have a slow roll inflation. And if you accept the framework of slow roll inflation, there are these parameters which, in principle, you can opt to relate to observations, right? You know, the ratio between the potential and the slow roll parameter gives you the amplitude of the scalar mode, the spectral index, and then the tensor mode. And here I want just to give you a flavor of what are our error bars that we can expect on these parameters, so that how much we can constrain these values. And you see the green curve is WMAP data after 4 years. And then a red curve if you add some ground-based polarization telescope. And then finally you see the blue one is the improvement that we can expect within Planck. So you see this is certainly, there is also the issue of non-Gaussianity, which I don't mention yet, but it's also a very good discriminator. So even if we don't know what the model of inflation is, we have certainly very good theoretical control. And we can hope to constrain these things better and better as the observations pile up. What really we don't know much is this intermediate period, which is between inflation and the nucleosynthesis, which is what I call what we call reheating. So for me, reheating is all the series of particle physics processes which begin with the decay of the inflaton and which end up with complete thermalization of the decay product. And this is certainly a small period in the time of the universe. However, there are many issues which are important and which are determined by this knowledge. And this is just one example. For example, we know that we believe in conventional model of inflation that the perturbations were generated during inflation and they left the horizon. You see, this is lambda, is the size of cosmological perturbation. During inflation, lambda increases over the horizon. Then at the end of inflation, the mode will start to re-enter, and this will be the mode, for example, that re-enters soon before today. And if you just look on textbook, this is the relation that you find between the number of defaults when the mode was generated. Do we have a pointer somewhere? Oh, I don't switch. I see. Good, thanks. So here is the number of defaults inside inflation when the mode was leaving the horizon. So it will control this region here. And here is how we relate it to the parameters that we know. But you see there is one important parameter which relates to reheating, which is the parameter here. And actually this calculation is done in the assumption that you have matter domination between the end of inflation and reheating. So what is assuming is essentially you have a massive inflaton. The massive inflaton is coherently oscillating, so its equation of state is effectively the one of matter. And then when it decays, you assume that you have an immediate thermalization, which instantaneously brings the equation of state from W is equal 0 to W is equal 1/3. However, in general, you could write these as the logarithm of the increase of the scale factor during this long stage. And I'm just interested to see what is our ignorance in this quantity here. If you just do the standard assumption with the simplest model, right, chaotic inflation, and with this rating temperature to take into account the Gravitino problem, this is the number that you should put. However, I will show later some results of numerical simulations where you have a very quick transition within already 20 increase in the scale factor after the end of inflation. This would force me to put this number over there. So this is parametrizing, or this is quantifying what is our uncertainty. Of course, it's a logarithm quantity, so it is squeezed. However, you see it's still an interesting number. And of course, this would be needed to know the link between the scales that we observe today and the time during inflation when they were generated. For example, if you see that today there is need to put a cutoff for the quadruple, for example, in this way you would need to know it to see where the cutoff is really has to go in the potential. The other reason why we should be interested was already mentioned by Paolo today, is the idea of modulated fluctuations. It's an alternative method to generate the perturbations, and these are not generated during inflation. At the time, they are still isocurvature fluctuations, but they get generated exactly at reheating. The idea, again, let me show the standard picture. You have a massive inflaton, so here is the equation of state of the inflaton is reshifting as the one of matter. And the inflaton is decaying differently in different regions of the universe. And you assume instantaneous thermalization of the decay products. So that, for example, here the inflaton decays slightly earlier. It means that for a slightly longer period of time, the universe is radiation dominated. In this part of the region, you will expect less energy density with respect to the other part. Of course, again, in order to really work out the numerics, to give some concrete predictions, you should really know the details of the transition between inflation and radiation-dominated liquid. And the model I'm going to consider, the one that, in my opinion, are the one which are natural. I will describe why, although I understand you can have a different flavor. Are the models where the inflaton is initially decaying in a non-perturbative way. The first papers, to my knowledge, that they considered the decay was Trashin and Brandenberger. And then, however, I will follow here the treatment which was done later on, Kaufman, Linde, Starobinsky, where they introduced the concept of preheating and the technicalities I'm going to discuss now. The idea is that very simple. Here you see, here's the model that they consider. It's really the simplest one I can imagine. Here you have an inflaton field, which is massive. And here is the inflaton field coupled to another field just by a quadratic interaction. And the crucial point is that the frequency for the field chi will be time dependent and will oscillate because the inflaton is oscillating around the minimum of this potential. So what you will have here is two terms in the frequency. There is no mass on itself. There is just the comoving momentum. This is the physical momentum. Here is the effective mass, which is due to the coupling with the inflaton. And I think we all know that whenever you have an oscillator, whenever the frequency is changing non-adiabatically, this is the meaning of this word, you're going to produce excitations of the oscillator. So this is the first effect which is entering. The second effect is that this is actually a resonant effect because you have the inflaton is oscillating, so this effect is repeating periodically with time, and you will have some modes which resent this resonance more than some other modes, so you will have a production which is given in a resonance band. Now you can ask me what are the couplings for which this effect is important, and what I can do, I can just compare the two terms which are here and there. And the typical momenta that you're going to produce, you will see, is the order of the inflaton mass. So here, in chaotic inflation, I will put something around 10 to the 13 GeV. Here, instead, what really makes your life, this effect important, is that the VEV of the inflaton is much bigger. It's of the order Planckian, a bit slighter than Planckian, but it is a very big VEV. So it's enough to have a coupling which is greater, G squared, greater than 10 to the minus 10, for this effect to be important. This is the condition under which preheating, this non-perturbative production, is an effect which is non-negligible. And here I'm just showing a bit more detail, although no calculation shown. Here is the mode for the second field. Here is excitation due to the fact that you have a periodic driving force. And here this is the occupation numbers. And there is some subtlety here, which is related to, so as I told you before, there are some modes which are resonant. These are the ones which are in white here, and some modes which are instead more stable. So what I'm showing here is the coupling, is this quantity. And instead, on the horizontal axis, on the vertical axis, I'm putting the momentum plus this quantity. And this is the chart for the equation, which controls the stability of the mode. And the region in white is where the mode is unstable, is where you have this resonance effect. But what is happening is that the physical momentum is reshifting. And so a mode will move between, here the chart should be much bigger, it will move between resonant and non-resonant bands. So here, for example, I'm concentrating on a mode which here is in a resonant regime, then it's entering a stable phase, so it's entering the gray area, and then again it will be resonant. You understand it's a bit complicated, but what is very nice in this stage is that you can still control everything analytically. So this calculation can be really done and you can have a good control over that. Now, what are the consequences of preheating? There are some interesting consequences. One is, for example, restoration of symmetries. Whenever you produce a distribution of particles, for example, a thermal distribution, you know that it's going to restore symmetry within some given value, which is given by the temperature. Here, you have distributions which are far from thermal, but they can also restore symmetries. The other effect, which is rather interesting, is the production of very massive particles. One example I'm just mentioning, because I worked on that, is leptogenesis. Leptogenesis is an idea where you first generate a lepton asymmetry, then you convert it into a baryonic asymmetry. However, to have leptogenesis, you need some CP violation, of course. But it turns out that the CP violation is related to the mass of the right-handed neutrinos. This is the lightest right-handed neutrino. And so in order to have enough CP violation, you need a mass which is sufficiently high. Now you do the calculation here, you assume that your right-handed neutrinos are initially produced thermally. So you can really do, there is no any assumption, this calculation is actually the only assumption that you do. You can find that in order to have sufficient asymmetry, you must have a right-handed neutrino which has a mass which is greater than a few times 10 to the 9 GeV. And accordingly, you need to take a reheating temperature which is about 10 to the 10 GeV or higher. And you may think, and this is my impression, this number is not in agreement with the number that we have for the gravitino problem. Such that if you believe in supergravity and if you think that the gravitino is unstable and has a mass which is not bigger than 20 TeV, these temperatures are not allowed because you would overproduce an amount of gravitinos. I will discuss better this point later. So the crucial point is that if you just stay on thermal leptogenesis, you are gonna probably not make it because you would require a too high reheating temperature. The alternative, I'm sure you're already predicting what I'm gonna say, is that I can produce the right-handed neutrino in a non-thermal way. It can be coupled directly to the inflaton, and I can look for production which is non-perturbative. And what is the most remarkable thing in this axis, you see the right-handed neutrino here has a mass which is higher than the inflaton mass. You have a particle which is decaying in something, and you're producing something which is heavier than the particle you started with. And the reason is because, I don't know if you can see here, hopefully, this is the total coupling. You can see that you have regions, since the BEV of the inflaton is very high, you have regions where the total mass vanishes. And in this region, your fermionic field is effectively massless, and you can produce them abundantly. And you see, when this is Q again, is the parameter Q squared is G, this is the maximal value at which the total mass vanishes at least once. For any given Q, you can have the total mass vanishing only up to some given value. And this is numerical results, but you see it's a very neat cutoff. And actually, there are also analytic calculations that we did, and you can reproduce very nicely all the scaling. This is just one particular example. Now I move into a stage where things are less understood. At the moment, I'm describing things which I can compute analytically, which I can really trust. Now I'm entering in a stage where preheating will stop. You see, so far I was discussing exponential production. It has to stop sometime. The moment at which it stops is when you produce a distribution of particles which then scatter against the inflaton field. You have a coherent inflaton field. It's producing quanta. This quanta will scatter back and will destroy the coherency of the process. In this way, the preheating will stop. And however, the problem is that it's very hard to study the system analytically because you have a very high occupation numbers. You can see, for example, here. So that you can expect that processes which have many incoming particles are as probable as processes which have a fewer number of incoming particles, which means that you cannot really do the standard perturbation theory to discuss this stage. Fortunately, we can do classical simulations. You can show that when there are very high occupation numbers, you can do classical simulations, and you can neglect the quantum effect, and you can trust your results. This is an example of one simulation. Here is the inflaton field. You see the oscillation of the zero mode. And here is the perturbations of the other field. And initially, the statistic is Gaussian. These are the same statistics that you would do for a large-scale structure, for example, to predict the number of peaks that you will find. We check that the statistics work very nicely. And you enter in a regime where the field develop some K-mode. And these K-mode are destroying the coherency of the inflaton field. And you see that as time passes, more and more K-mode, more and more fragmentation occurs, which is showing that the system is going toward the ultraviolet. I will show you what this means in momentum space. In a sense, this means that the system is thermalizing. Oh, this is a bit. And indeed, this is in Fourier space. This is the occupation number versus momentum. And here you see the production, which is the non-perturbative production, which is taking place. And then later on, the distributions are accumulating towards the ultraviolet. And you see particle fusion. And the perturbations are moving very, very slowly. And you can ask yourself, how far am I from a thermal bath? Is this distribution thermal or not? And the answer is clearly not, because this is what you would expect from a thermal distribution in the region of high occupation numbers. You would expect that omega times n is approximately a constant. And you see that this certainly is not taking place here. So what you find is that the distribution tends to reach a saturated form, which is moving very slowly. You see you don't have any peak here, because rescattering has washed out the structure. However, the distributions are still very far from thermal. And you wonder what is the equation of state of this moment, for example, or how far will it take to me to reach thermalization. You see the occupation numbers are still much higher than one, so that you can still neglect a quantum effect at all this stage. This is the inflaton field. Oh, sorry, I didn't mention this. This is an important point that I wrote, but I forgot to mention. Something that you can see from the numerics is that you don't need to couple a field directly to the inflaton field to be exponentially excited during this stage, because in this sense, the field chi is doing a mediator. So all the fields in your theory which are coupled with each other, they are going to be resonant amplified at this stage. They don't need... Sorry? No, I'm not obliged. Indeed, I even forgot to mention. But it's just something which is even... is a generic issue. If you have many fields in the theory, they don't need to be directly coupled to the inflaton in order to have this effect. That's a very good question. If you couple to more fields, you're likely to speed up the process. However, we did three or four, not more of them, and we didn't see we saw that the population was slightly more in the UV, but we didn't see any dramatic effect. The other reason, you may ask, maybe you're taking two small couplings. However, if I take a too large coupling, this field is not excited at all, because it would cost you too much energy to excite this field. So this thing is certainly also not very intuitive, in the sense that it's not obvious that large coupling will mean a quicker thermalization. Yes? Good. Okay, here I'm discussing, you can read the coupling by the number. So here the number will be g squared 10 to the minus 8, because at rescattering, I don't have the calculation here, but you can show it analytically, the preheating will stop when the occupation number is of the order 1 over g squared. So what I need coupling. Here I'm really taking the things which help me to show better things. I need coupling which are sufficiently small, but not too small, otherwise the effect would not take place. So I showed before 10, bigger than 10 to the minus 10, and this is the value I'm considering here. Then there is a third process, which is the one which I have really little control over. I think nobody has a very good control over it, which is the time of really thermalization. So I left before the distribution, which were far from thermal, and now I'm questioning how can I see really thermalization going on. And the best analysis, to my knowledge, is a paper of last year of Micha and Kachoff, which discussed the spirit of turbulence. They discussed the theory of these models only for a special case, actually. You should consider only lambda phi to the 4. This is the model that they consider. In this model, there is no any mass scale because, you know, it's a conformal scale. So you can factor out the expansion of the universe. And you can study the distributions analytically. And this is certainly a toy model of reheating. This is a big trouble. However, there are some interesting features that can be worked out for this model. One feature is that at late time, sufficiently late time, the evolution of the spectrum is evolving in a self-similar way. And in this self-similar way, it's controlled by the theory of these are classical waves which are colliding. And there is quite a big literature on this problem. And this m is equal 3 is essentially you assume that the processes which are dominating only involve 3 quanta, which are scattering against the zero mode of the inflaton. There is still a residual zero mode of the inflaton. And this is the only parameter that you enter. Once you have this parameter, you can work out this theory. This theory is giving you the value for the coefficient here. And these values work very nicely because you see these are the distribution before the scaling. You see they are going towards the ultraviolet. Again, there is some thermalization going on. And you see that when you do the rescaling, they are pretty well superimposed. Again, this would be n is equal omega to the minus 1, what you would expect for a thermal spectrum. Here is the coefficient that you find just plugging the number m is equal 3, which you see is a very rough indication because it doesn't allow you to control all the shape of the distribution. However, this allows you to control the better region, the region which is dominating the energy density of the universe. And I don't want to go through this calculation. This is what you need to do in order to study the turbulent regime. But the only thing that I want really to concentrate here is, you know, when you do a Boltzmann equation, this is how you want to discuss the scattering. These are the collisional integrals. What you are doing here, you are expanding around the fields which you have there. So typically in flat space, you would just expand around this term. But here you have a zero mode. And here you have also a variance. In a sense, this is your definition, what you call free field and what you call interacting field. And if you do so, you end up with some collisional integral, which are very horrible. So I didn't write them there. But then one important point is in the collisional integral, you know you have this form factor. And something that people sometimes say is that preheating is a non-perturbative process. However, we know that preheating doesn't, in many cases, remove all of the particles from the zero mode. So a sentence that you find in paper is that preheating will be initially important, but later on you will have standard reheating. And standard reheating will be the standard perturbative calculation. The standard perturbative calculation, however, is done in the dilute gas approximation, which is assuming that the occupation number are always smaller than 1. And typically, to get the standard rate, you will put 1 here, and you will neglect this number. The point that I want to make is that you see this is quite the opposite. So that even if preheating will become less important, you are left with a mess of particles which are highly excited and very far from equilibrium. And even if the interactions are perturbative, you certainly cannot use the standard assumption that people use. Ooh, okay. So let me move quickly to the things that we have done. So here we have just discussed numerically what is the equation of state. And here we find an intermediate regime. I hope you can see this, where the equation of state is going to an intermediate value, which is neither the one of matter nor the one of radiation. And this is a mixture. In a sense, it is probably obvious to expect that you have a mixture of relativistic and non-relativistic quanta. However, this is something which certainly leaves an imprinting when you want to calculate things like modulated perturbation. Also, what you find is that the transition period, here I just decide arbitrary what I call transition. The transition is a period which is not a monotonic function of the coupling. So when you are interested really in computing the spectrum of modulated perturbations, things are not so linear and as simple as you would expect, at least when you consider this effect. Here you will see the effective masses, but let me discuss later on. And let me just briefly discuss what is the effect of a trilinear interaction. You know the interaction that I was writing before is an interaction which eventually will freeze out because this is not really an inflaton decay. So what I need to do, at least I have to add an interaction where I have only one inflaton field. And this is what we did just to discuss if thermalization would speed up or not. However, what we find an interesting effect, which is another form of preheating. And you see that when the phi is negative in principle and not very big, you can have that the total mass of the chi field will be smaller than zero. So just the oscillation of phi will give a tachyonic effect for chi. Of course, the quartic interaction is going against the tachyonic effect. However, what you have is that you know that preheating mainly is valid when phi is close to zero. And when phi is close to zero, this term is expected to be dominant. Also, you know that the expansion of the universe is decreasing the amplitude of phi. So at some point, this term will be important. And we just found this paper in the literature. They discuss, they also notice this effect applying to, as a possible solution for the moduli problem. What you find, I will just mention this, is that what I was telling you before in parametric resonance, you have some instability bands. These are the instability bands where the inflaton resonate with your frequency so that you have resonance. Here you find an effect which is very funny, is the opposite of resonance. You would have mod, which on their own would be exponentially amplified because you have the tachyonic regime. This is the tachyonic regime is taking place for half of the oscillation. However, there are some regions where the variation of the frequency conspire to eliminate the tachyonic growth. So what you will have in this case, you will have what you could call some non-resonance stability bands, in a sense. So in general, you expect tachyonic growth. For some given special value of the momentum, you will expect stability. But this is a very negligible and small effect. And just to show the effect for thermalization, compare the result without the trilinear term with the trilinear term. You see that indeed you have more modes populated in the ultraviolet. So you can see that indeed there is particle fusion, which is taking on. And in particular, this is true for the phi field due to interaction of quanta of chi, which are fusing, producing quantum field phi. The reason why you expect particle fusion, again, is because the population are very populated in the infrared. So you will expect that the thermalization goes in the direction of populating more and more the ultraviolet. And to see the effect on the equation of state, we can now run the code for some longer time. And you can see again the model where you have only quadratic term and the model where you add a trilinear term. I'm sorry, I don't have the value of the coupling here. But you see that without the trilinear term, at some point the inflaton will start to be important again, is the residual zero mod of the inflaton. And the equation of state will go back towards matter domination, although it's something which is still far. We cannot get it from the lattice. However, you see, as soon as you introduce this term, here you see it's also the ratio of relativistic modes in the inflaton with respect to non-relativistic mode. You see, in this example, the inflaton is all non-relativistic. So it means that the momenta of the inflaton field are very small. Here, due to this term, you see that the momenta of the inflaton are very important, and most of the inflaton quanta remained in a relativistic regime. And this has an important effect on the equation of state. And let me just, I will abuse of your passion for a couple of minutes, and then I'm done, if the chairman allows me. Thanks. And let me just mention another effect, which I believe... I pretend I misunderstood. And an important thing which you discuss, as I said before, I was telling you that there is a limit on the reheating temperature. This limit is about 10 to the 9 GV. This comes from scatterings which produce one gravitino. So here you have one Max Planck suppressed vertex. Here you typically have a Gaiji interaction. And this calculation will allow you to put a limit on the maximum reheating temperature of the universe. But what you are doing here, you are computing the amount of gravitinos that you have produced only after the distributions have thermalized. What you are doing here, you are neglecting the possible production while thermalization is taking over. And there are some technical issues involved here, but unless you ask me, I will not go through them. But the reason to take in a small reheating temperature, in a sense, you are freezing the inflaton. You are requiring the inflaton to oscillate coherently without having momentum, so that the scatterings that I was describing before are not taking place. In the example that we were discussing, instead the inflaton was decaying immediately. You had a bunch of distributions. This distribution, of course, was very far from thermal. However, you could compute the production of gravitinos from this distribution. And what we did an estimate of this production. I will not go over it. I will just show that, for example, we find that if the coupling is greater than this value, this is just a Yukawa interaction for a fermion that you add, the model will lead to overproduction of gravitinos. Of course, as usual, there is much more model dependency here, because these are, by definition, model-dependent calculations. However, my point here is that you should not study production of gravitinos only after the thermal distributions have formed and completely thermalized, but there may be an important production even before. Because even if the distribution is far from thermal, it forms very early, so its energy density is rather high. Okay, I will conclude. I deliberately chose to discuss here the most conventional, what I believe is the most conventional model of reheating. I didn't discuss any interesting features that there are. And the reason is that I wanted to show you, at least my feeling, is that even if in this case reheating is really what we would call it in the standard paradigm of cosmology, there is some degree of uncertainty we associated with it. This, for example, here is the limit on the allowed values for the reheating temperature. I was discussing some of the issues, although it's a very limited discussion, the one I presented, on things for which it's relevant to do these calculations. And I'm a bit pessimistic by nature, probably, but if you, from this talk, you get the feeling that I wasn't very quantitative, that's also my feeling, that we still lack control, at least in these models, of quantitative things. And probably we need major either numerical advance, or we should understand how to do the scaling also for just not lambda 5 to the 4 case. Okay, thank you.
Questions? We can have many questions over an appropriate liquid diet. So maybe we should consider doing that. Okay, so I think that this is at the bistro. Yeah.